On the line, we have actually got Graham Wells from the Social Security Rights Victoria. Graham is the principal lawyer and clinical supervisor there, and we're pretty keen to talk to Graham this morning about the legalities surrounding the robo-debt scandal. Welcome, Graham.
Good morning, Zane. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, good morning. So I guess the first kind of question I want to ask is what are sort of the legal issues, you know, surrounding these sort of automated kind of debt notices that have been sent to people around Centrelink?
Okay, well, I guess the first thing is there's various types of Centrelink debt, and it's usually when there's been some level of income misreporting. So if I'm working part-time, and I'm on New Start, or if I'm on youth allowance or I study, then what I've got to do is let Centrelink know of any income that I might receive. So I've done all those things. I've rung them up every fortnight or done it online via MyGov, or even gone into the office and said, here's my payslip, here's my income. And I've done all those right things. So time rolls on, and this new, I guess, algorithm or data matching software is added to the system. But what's happening is, instead of it looking at each pay period, so each fortnight I might get paid or something like that, it looks at a total amount that is provided by the Australian Taxation Office. And this is what would appear normally on someone's group certificate. And then what it's doing, it's averaging that out per annum to see if per fortnight per annum I'd be eligible for whatever payment I'm on. Now, that all sounds fine, but the problem is, it's instead of looking at it fortnightly, it's looking at it per annum. So if I do some contract work or some sessional work and I earn a squillion dollars for that month or those 2 or 3 months, and that puts me above an annualised per annum, I guess, amount, then what happens is a debt's raised for all of that time, rather than just those fortnights that I was supposed to be reporting. And so it's this whole process of annualisation which is causing a lot of problems.
In your opinion, is that a legitimate type of accounting?
I think it's... Well, there's a number of people exploring this, and I've got to do some more work on this later this morning and help prepare an opinion for another large... we're not a large legal organisation, but a very large legal organisation, because this is what we're checking, is the legality of the whole thing. Now, Centrelink, and to me it smacks of recklessness right from the beginning in a legal sense, that Centrelink knows that this isn't accurate. Okay, so, you know, they've got lots of resources. The people who originally designed this algorithm or commissioned this form of data matching knew it was going to catch people that had no debt. But they've gone ahead and done it anyway. So to me, that's not very good practice at all. And we've got to note that, and look, sorry if I'm using legal terms, but the Commonwealth, so the federal government, is what's known as a model litigant. So they can only, they've said, and the Attorney General said to them, you can only pursue matters where there's legal merit or legal worth. And they've got a fairly high standard. And now to go around and knowing that there's going to catch people who've got no debt and proceed anyway, to me, that's wrong. That's wrongful. And that's something we and a number of other organisations across the country are trying to pursue.
It seems the way the Commonwealth is, the way that Centrelink is going about sending out these debts is almost reminiscent of these film production companies who sent out what were known as speculative invoices, where they had some internet record of people illegally downloading films or whatever, and then they would send a massive invoice to them and say, oh, you've illegally downloaded this film, give us $20,000, and they would just sort of see who would cough up the money and see what they...
Exactly. And that's a really good analogy, and it's certainly something people are thinking about at the moment in terms of challenging this. And it is speculative. The minister, Mr. Alan Tudge, I hope you and Mr. Hank Jorgen of Centrelink are listening, but you've already said that you're hoping to raise $4 billion in revenue. Now, to me, that's speculative, if nothing else is. So put very simply, or put very plainly, this whole thing is a large fishing expedition to raise revenue or minimise expenditure on Centrelink's behalf. And, you know, they say that they're out to stop people committing frauds. No, that's not what they're trying to do. I mean, frauds under the, can be pursued under the criminal code. But and it's wrongful, and of course, I don't think anyone wants to see people going around committing wrongs against people or against the Commonwealth, because eventually it just affects everybody else. But this is a bit different, and so they know they're out there to get money, as much money as they can, and that there's a lot of people who have no debt who are caught up in this whole thing. And even if someone does have a debt, all we want is fairness. You know, that's what the law's about. It's being fair. And doing good law is being fair. It's making sure that all people have access to their rights, their entitlements. And if any of your listeners are caught up with any of these online debts, I'd be asking them to contact their community legal centre. So their nearest community legal centre, there's all sorts across the Victorian countryside and the Melbourne metropolitan area. And or if they can't get through or they're not sure, try Victoria Legal Aid, because they're doing a fantastic job with this as well. Because it's not just a social issue, it's becoming a legal issue. When people have debts raised against them, there's all sorts of stories about debt collectors pursuing them and harassing them. It's really important that people feel that they can do something about this.
I have an interest to declare here. I got sent one of these debts, which was eventually dropped after I challenged it. I was sort of clutching around trying to figure out what I would do to fight the debt. One of the things that I looked at was the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission website. Now, I later realised that ACCC legislation is for private corporations. It doesn't cover public entities like Centrelink, but it was interesting. Three things that I found regarding debt is, number one, if you are being chased for a debt, you're entitled to ask the party that's chasing you for that debt for, documentation that says why you owe them money. I went into a Centrelink office and they just printed out a one-page invoice for the money. They didn't print me out a dossier showing how their computer had calculated this debt, and it took a lot of chasing to get what was called my ADEX, my ADEX debt schedule, mailed out to me. And even then, when I spoke to them on the phone, they tried to read the thing out over the phone, like this giant spreadsheet. So what's the deal there legally? What sort of
Look, as you said, these spreadsheets are incredibly complex. And just for the sake of your listeners who probably haven't seen one of them, imagine a very large A3 piece of paper divided up into a whole series of little squares with different figures. And it will have every amount of income that's been reported on that, every time Centrelink's paid someone any new start or youth allowance or whatever as well, and various additions and deductions accordingly. And they're really complex, and there'll be some totals at the bottom of the page. Now, to get a copy of one of that information, you've pretty much got to do an FOI, or as you've done, really be quite persistent and determined and ask for reasons how and why and show the evidence of how this debt was raised. Now, this is the heart of the problem. And look, a Senate inquiry was announced, I think, yesterday. I've only heard it secondhand, but I know it's out there. And so I've got to look at that later this morning. But there's also an ombudsman's own motion investigation at the moment as well into this. So these are things that people can contribute to. So, and one is the complexity. Now, why is it so complex? Because if I'm paid on yesterday being the 9th of February, and I contact Centrelink that day, the Centrelink reporting period might be next week on a particular day, or it might have been the week before on a particular day. So Centrelink, for some reason, cannot process it on the day it's been reported and then average it for between a fortnight to match their own reporting schedule. So there's all these little gaps of days right through the whole 12-month period. And this is where a lot of income debts arise, in that Centrelink's not happy with the figure that they get because it doesn't match the figure that's generated on their system, which might have 2 or 3 days plus interest or something else on it. And that triggers a lot of this investigation. And what we're seeking is to for that to be sorted out right at the beginning. So the amount that someone declares to Centrelink when they're paid is the amount that's used to assess their income. And it's not averaged, again, 12 months down the line or averaged into some other figure, but that they can adapt their own reporting schedule to match each Centrelink customer or each person's actual income and income dates. It can't be rocket science. And I'm not an accountant, but the joke in our office is that you've more or less got to be an accountant to be able to report your income to Centrelink to get it matching with their system because it's so inflexible. And it's ridiculous. It really is quite ridiculous in today's day and age.
Now, the other thing that I came up against when I was disputing my debt is the onus of proof. So, if Telstra or a car loan company or a bank or whatever wants to chase me and say, hey, you owe us money, they've got to be able to demonstrate that, and they're not allowed to set their debt collectors on me until it's been very clearly established that I definitely owe them that debt. The Centrelink process reverses the onus of proof and puts it on the person who's being chased for the debt to chase up old pay slips, and they say, oh, well, according to Fair Work Australia, you're entitled to these pay slips. But that's just because I'm technically entitled to these pay slips doesn't mean, A, I can fire my old employer, or B, they're going to actually cough it up. So,
exactly. And the other thing is your employer might not be in existence any longer. I mean, we had a client just a week or two ago, and his employer goes out of business quite regularly. And so they start up again under a new name. Now, that's an issue for them, a separate issue that's problematic with Phoenix companies rising and disappearing and rising again. But this fellow would work for this company that kept changing its name every year, and he'd earn a significant amount of money in a short period, and the debt was annualised, and we're working through that. But the thing is, if the employer's not there anymore, there won't be any pay records. And so it's very hard for someone to come up with a pay slip. Now, what the history of the data matching is that in the past, well, back in 1990, there's a Data Matching Act. And so that gave Centrelink the ability to go back and look at ATO records or other records and compare with their own records to see if there's differences. And they used to work through about 20,000 investigations every year. Now, with this new algorithm, that lets them do a significant more. And since July of last year, or this current year, they've done something like 230 or 40,000 irregularities or investigations just where the algorithm sees a difference and generates an investigation. Now, the result of that, most people get a letter asking them to show payslips or provide some sort of evidence. And it's pretty hard, as I said, if the company is out of business. The other thing is, it's also pretty hard going back 6 years looking for payslips when that company may have moved, or you may have moved, or their records might not be there, or they might have been entered incorrectly. There might be various typos on both sides. And so it's going to take a bit of time to get that. If someone can't get their payslips, what we've advised them is to go back and try to find copies of their bank account at the time to show when they were being paid and when they received income, and to provide that to Centrelink. And that'll show when they weren't receiving income as well. So there are other ways in which people can follow that up. I've said in other areas that Centrelink's got fairly vast and powerful information gathering arms, so they can actually go to an employer and ask them for the payslips, and the employer's got a legal obligation to provide those. And it's a fairly serious matter. If they don't provide them, then they may get a big fine, or they may end up with, they may get a very significant fine as a result. So it's something they have to do. But then employers change address as well, and so that they may never receive that, or they may have a different name, and I've already talked about typos and things, which if they come up on a computer, no one will realise that it's a similar sounding name or a misspelt name. Whereas if you've got a real person doing this, then they may pick that up.
They'll support it. Yeah. All right. And as you've mentioned, if people are struggling with a robo death, they should approach Vic Legal Aid or some other.
Well, to me, the important thing to think about is it's becoming a legal matter if they've got a debt generated against them. Now, you know, someone can think, oh, who gives this stuff? I'll just ignore it completely. Well, what will happen is at some point in time, if you get a tax return, Finlink will garnish that and take it to pay what this debt is. And sooner or later, someone's going to start trying to take money out of your account, whether that's a debt collector or Finlink itself. Hmm. They call that, the legal term for that is garnishing funds as well. So they get an order, or they just start taking money out steadily. So if someone ignores this completely, sooner or later, money's going to go missing from their accounts or from their tax return. And the key thing, I think, for people is to do something about that. And that's why I'm saying go to your local community legal centre. I mean, and a big shout-out to all those community legal centre workers out there and all those people working in the community, because it's a very busy time and they're doing a fantastic job. If you can't, not sure where your community legal centre is or who to talk to, try Victoria Legal Aid. And I know they've got a team of people dedicated to these robo debts at the moment. So that's a starting point as well.
Yeah, wicked. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning. And, keep up the good work in challenging and providing advice for other organisations that are challenging this robo debt system.
Thank you. You're very welcome, and all the best to the program and to your listeners, and I hope that they don't get caught up in this scam. Because that's what it is, really. It's a big scam, and there's better ways of doing things. Yeah. And, you know, if people have got the energy and they can get involved and contact the Ombudsman's office and make a submission to their investigation and or think about writing their own case history and what happened to them and sharing that with the Senate inquiry that's been announced, because the more people that get behind that, the more chance there'll be of real change taking place.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, wicked. All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Graham Wells there, the principal lawyer and clinical supervisor at Social Security Rights Victoria.
And they have a Facebook page which you can like, which is search up Social Security Rights Victoria.